not as a first resort, as a last resort. Okay? And so involved in the abandoning of harming others physically, abandoning killing, is to protect life, and to protect life in all ways that we possibly can. You know, to create a safe environment, to eliminate threats to health, okay? So that means disposing of our toxic things properly, not putting our paint in the garbage can, not, you know? I mean, just small kind of day-to-day things. You know, what do we do with the paint with lead in it? What do we do with toxic things around the house? How do we dispose of them? Well, you know, to use our physical action in the proper way, dispose of them in a safe way that doesn't endanger the environment. You know, to try and create healthy environment, to give shelter to others, to, you know, create a place that's safe for other people to live in. I mean, even it could get us as fine-tuned as not driving when we don't need to. And it can get as fine-tuned as carpooling when we possibly can. Okay? In an attempt to create a safe environment for other people. You know, not putting out pellets to kill the slugs in the garden. You know, offer your vegetables. Okay? That's what we did last year. We offered them. Okay. Patty Jo grew beautiful vegetables and the slugs really liked her. So, you know, promoting life. And so here we get into the Buddhist practice of releasing animals. And this is something that's done a lot in Chinese culture. It's a very, very lovely practice. I did it a lot when we lived in Singapore. We can organize it sometime here too if people would like. You go down to a place where there's lots. I mean, in Singapore it was very easy. At the marketplace they would have animals that were ready to be slaughtered. You know, not necessarily a pig or a cow down there. You know, that's kind of difficult to liberate. You know, unless you want to have them live in your backyard or something. But, you know, all sorts of, you know, sea creatures, and they had turtles and eels and, you know, grasshoppers that you feed to your fish, and, you know, pet birds in captivity. So any kind of living being that is going to be slaughtered or imprisoned, then there's a special practice where you take it out and you liberate them. Last year when I was in Mexico, we did this too. And it was a practice we did with the children. And so the families all went out in the morning, and they got different animals. Somebody even got a hawk. We had some really interesting ones, an owl. And then we gathered in a park, and we said prayers, you know, to kind of imprint the Dharma seed from the animals' minds, and then we set them free. No, you buy them, and then you liberate them. Yeah. No, you know, you go out and you buy all of them. Yeah, don't steal. Okay. So creating a safe environment, liberating those who are in physical distress. Also taking care of the sick. Okay, so this whole thing of avoiding harming others physically complements us also to help them when they are in physical distress. Okay, so if you see an accident on the street, stop and help. Okay, if Aunt Ethel is sick, go over and help her. If somebody's in the hospital, visit them or call them or send them a card. Okay? And this, again, is something that we often tend to neglect, often because of our own fears. We don't like to see people who are dying. We don't like to see people who are sick. We're too busy. You know, we have so many important things to do in our life. You know, can't you have your surgery another week when I'm not so busy? You know, can't you die some other time? You know, and I mean, really, especially when people are sick, because we know how we feel when we're sick. I mean, some people are hermits when they're sick. Let them be hermits. Don't impose ourselves. But other people, when they're sick, I mean, they want somebody to bring them a glass of orange juice, you know, or vegetarian chicken soup, or, you know, whatever it is. We like to be taken care of when we're sick, and so the same with other people. And to take that opportunity when it's there, either with neighbors or relatives. Okay? And to do it with a happy mind, not with this mind that's, you know, really rushed and I have so many other things to do and okay, yeah, here it is, you got it, and you know, now I'll go live the rest of my life because it's really inconvenient for me to take care of you when you're sick. Yeah. But really, you know, to take care of the sick with a lot of love, a lot of care. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we kind of do the best we can, but I think as much, especially direct, causing direct harm, you know, as much as we can abandon that, it gets better. It's hard. We definitely live in an imperfect world. A lot of these things isn't like there's, you know, one simple solution that's good for everybody. Yeah.
There's no answer.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, in many situations we do the best we can with as much good heart as we can. That's why they say that just keeping one precept now is much weightier karmically than keeping lots of precepts at the time of the Buddha, because it's so much more difficult now. Yeah. You know, so that's why the people who have the five precepts really feel kind of proud of yourself. You know, not that kind of proud, but, you know, a sense of rejoice and satisfaction. Yeah. True. I mean, in many ways it's harder now. Yeah. I think that's a real important point that you brought out, that some of the purpose of this is for the effect it has on others, but a big purpose is the effect it has on ourselves. Yeah. And how are we when we try and become more aware of what we do with the slugs and the aphids and the ants and where we walk and when we walk and, you know, how much we drive. Lots of things like this. To really, it's not just the effect on the society, but how it makes us slow down and really look at what we're doing and look at our motivation, recognize our interdependence with others. Okay, so also when we help other people physically, when we help the sick or help them, to not do it out of guilt or obligation, you know, but to do it with a real kind attitude as much as we can, not do it so that others will owe us a favor, but just again out of a kind attitude that wants to give. Especially when we take care of the sick, it really means developing our own equanimity. Because when people are sick, sometimes they're very irritable, sometimes they tune us out, sometimes they talk too much. They aren't always in control of their body, speech, and mind when they're sick. And we have to have some equanimity. That's it. Also, when people are sick, you know, I mean, we have to be able to deal with, you know, saliva and excrement and all sorts of stuff like that. You know, but to really help people, you know, when they need it. Help them talk about the things they need talking about, especially if, you know, you're with somebody who's terminal. They may want to talk about different spiritual issues or emotional issues or whatever it is. Giving them the space to do that. Yeah, helping them in that way as much as they can. Okay, so it's kind of developed some kind of path, you know, how to nurse, you know, how to help somebody, how to give medicine. And lots of times we leave that up to professionals. I mean, I really see the difference. Even when I lived in Singapore, when one student of mine was dying there, and he was at home and his family was doing a lot of the care for him. You know, and I was thinking that here we would probably just keep somebody in a hospital or in a hospice and have a stranger do that. But there, you know, this sister was, you know, helped carrying him into the bathroom. Or, you know, all these other kinds of personal things that we often don't do with the people in our family. We feel embarrassed, and then strangers do that. Sometimes that, you know, our family member may feel better if a stranger does that. So that's fine. But sometimes they may feel better if somebody in their family helps them. So, you know, to be sensitive in that way. Not just kind of give everything more and more over to professionals, but to be involved in the care ourselves, too. And then another aspect of bringing to fruition our capacity for action is to abandon taking things that haven't been given to us, stealing. You know, using things that work for our own personal use that aren't ours. You know, borrowing things and not returning them. Oh, which reminds me, will people please bring my books back? I've been losing a lot of books lately. Please only keep the books you check out a month. Please bring them back. Okay, so borrowing things and not returning. Borrowing money and not paying it back to other people. You know, these kinds of things. And so instead of kind of always taking, to try and, you know, again, use our action in this way to give. Yeah? To give material things when we possibly can, but also not to think that giving material things is enough. I think we have a big tendency now to think that if we just write out a check, then our obligation is over. Yeah? If we just give a check to a charity, if we just give a check to a friend, if we just give a check here, if we just give a gift, then that's our obligation. And so don't use giving as a way to buy ourselves out of our feeling of guilt. Because another kind of giving is also offering service. Now, sometimes we're better equipped to offer money. If we offer service, we might make a mess. But we shouldn't think that offering money is a way to not offer service. And so, if, you know, when we can, you know, to actually help people physically in the things that they need help with, if they're moving or if they're building something or if they're planting or whatever it is, you know, to offer service. You know. Even things like within the Dharma group, don't just think that, I gave something to the Donna basket, I paid my thing, you know. First of all, Donna isn't paying. Okay, Donna means gift. It means generosity. It's not paying for the teachings. It's not getting rid of this feeling of obligation. Okay? It's a freely offered gift in the same way that the teachings are freely offered. And the same way that you know, we want to offer service to the group. We want to offer service to the Triple Gem and to help the Dharma spread. Yeah. And so to try and use our energy in that way, too, and not just kind of expect everybody else to do all the work in the group. Because then it just boils down to the same, you know, group of people again and again who really need some help and some rest. But to try and offer service. To try and also protect people when they're in danger. This is a type of generosity. It's also a way of, you know, protecting life. But really to evoke the spirit of giving within ourselves, not always keeping tabs of whose turn it is to pay when we go out to eat or how much I spent on their gift last Christmas and how much they spent on mine, so what I'm going to give to them this year. Okay. But having the spirit of generosity that really wants to give. And then when we give, to really give in a kind way, not in a disrespectful way. You know, if you give to somebody, a beggar in India, a homeless person here, give in a respectful way. Okay? Look the person in the eye. If there's very nice things to give, give the nice things instead of keeping the nice ones for ourselves and giving the good ones, the bad ones to other people. I read about somebody once who said every 2 weeks she tried to make it a practice to give away something in her house that she liked. Yeah. So really making that a practice to develop that spirit of generosity so that we give away something that we like. Because we want the other person to be happy. And so we give without fear. We're not fearing to lose the thing ourselves. But we're giving because we just because there's some kind of pleasure in it. And not giving when people flatter us, you know, or giving, we give a lot. Like when people flatter us, when we give a lot, okay? When people are nice, when they're kind, when they say nice, sweet things, then we give them lots and lots and lots. And then when they're mean to us, then we don't give them anything at all, okay? And not going around them, well, who's so good that they can be the recipient of my gift? Yeah. Because sometimes we can be very proud and arrogant in our giving. You know, we give because we want recognition. We want other people to know how generous and philanthropic we are. You know, we write out our checks with a big smile. Yeah. Okay, but to really check the mind, check the motivation, you know, develop the good heart. Okay, so there's actually another aspect to this, but I think I'm going to wait and hold on for that till next time. That's why we'll sit a bit of a discussion. It's getting late. So any closing questions now? So somebody comes, asks you for information, you know it's going to hurt them. I think it's going to depend a lot on the situation and a lot on who the person is, what the information is, what your relationship with them is. If you feel that the information might be painful at first, but it could eventually lead to a good result, and it would be better than withholding the information, then you may want to tell them. If you have a close relationship with them, then even though it's going to be painful, you're kind of committed to staying there and helping them through that. Yeah. So it's going to, you have to look at many different aspects in the situation. Oh, yeah, it's very easy to lie sometimes. Yeah, sometimes it's very easy. Sometimes, you know, it's very easy. And sometimes it's very uncaring to do that. Yeah. I don't want to get involved in somebody else's problems. And heartaches will also contain ignorance. Yeah, if you know that in the end it might be able to really help them. For example, let's say somebody's having difficulty at work, and you know it's because of X, Y, and Z, something that they did on a certain project, but they don't know that, and they come and they're all saying, you know, I got this really bad grade on, you know, the rating, and I don't understand why. Do you know why? And you know why. Because of what, you know, the work that they did on a particular project. And you know that, you know, it's not going to be pleasant saying that to them. But maybe if you could give them the feedback and spell it out, then they could come to see how they could improve their, you know, what they're doing. And so you're telling them not because you want to hurt them or cause them harm or make them lose self-confidence, but because you want to give them information so that they can actually, you know, improve and do things a different way later on. Yeah. So that might be painful at first to say to somebody. Okay, so spend a few minutes just contemplating.